Great. Okay, our next presentation is No Mother or Child Left Behind, Cuba's Maternal and Child Homes and Implications for the U.S. And Deborah Ann Jones, MD, MBA, is a board-certified doctor in maternal fetal medicine and obstetrics and gynecology. She's immediate past director of OBGYN at St. Mary's Medical Center in West Palm Beach, Florida. She completed her undergraduate and medical school education at Wayne State University of Medicine, and she's written peer-reviewed articles, given numerous presentations in high-risk obstetrics, and serves as a reviewer for the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology. Her passion is giving of her time and talent to improve the lives of women and their unborn children, primarily in low-resource communities here at home and in our global communities. Welcome.
Hi, good morning. How are you? I'm the lone man out here, being the physician and not the public health person. I am about to give a presentation on some observations that I had while I had the honor of joining a group of people on a delegation to trip to Cuba last year. Last year, I thought of Cuba as a nice place to visit for its historical data for how it would. How we could use Cuba to help strengthen maternal fetal medicine in our community, and I'm going to share with you some of my observations. I have no disclosures. The focus of this presentation is primarily on describing maternity care in Cuba while we visited a maternity home in Havana in 2010. A little background for those of you who don't know where Cuba is. Cuba is in the Caribbean. It has a small population of about 11,000 people, million people, with a adult literacy rate of 100%. Cuba is a communistic country which assumed power in 1959. Its gross domestic product is about $114 billion compared to the $14 trillion of the United States. And if you look around the Caribbean at other countries, their gross domestic product is approximately 40% in Dominican Republic. Haiti has a gross domestic product of about $9 billion. The main source of income in Cuba is tourism, biomedical export, about $300 million of biomedical export, primarily in vaccines and sugarcane. Cuba spends most of its resources in education and in healthcare. If you compare how much they spend, though, on their healthcare as a percentage of their GDP, you can see that they spend much less than we do in the United States. And after this presentation, you'll see that their outcomes are much better than we have here in the United States. So the foundation of Cuban's healthcare policy is that health is a human right. All people of Cuba have the right to have healthcare. They use a public health approach, which they focus mostly on prevention in Cuba's healthcare policy. All medical services in Cuba is free of charge. Every person living there has the right to have access to health care, regardless of their ability to pay. And a lot of what they do is through regional health services They have these things called polyclinics, which we'll talk about a little bit more, and then maternity homes, and then they have specialty hospitals. This is just a picture that I took when I was there about, and this was located within the polyclinic. So a polyclinic is like our family practice office to us here in the United States, and they have these family practice primary care clinics throughout the community, and they're about 2 to 3 doctors and some nurses, and they're in charge of the health of the community in which they live in, and they have all the statistics about the community and the community's health. So in this particular polyclinic, these physicians and nurses are responsible for the total population there, 3,000, about 4,000 people, and they know what percentage are men or women, and they also know the patients that are there just for preventative care, patients who have ongoing medical problems, people who are hospitalized. They know the health of their community. This is put up in the waiting room of the physician's office or this polyclinic. They also know how many women are not pregnant and would be under preconception. They know the obesity status, people who smoke in their community, alcohol, and social determinants are also known. So this is the basis for the entire system, and there are multiple polyclinics throughout Cuba. We happen to have the opportunity to see one of them in Havana. So through our observations, we found that Cuba utilizes these community-based maternity homes to provide comprehensive health care to their high-risk women. Maternity homes started in 1959, thereabouts, and they had 15 homes, and it was basically designed to meet the geographic disparity that they had in Cuba. They found that mothers and babies were dying because they lived in rural areas and they had to get into a hospital to deliver their babies. So they initially developed this community-based maternity home, which is an actual home where women are sent to if they are found to have certain high-risk factors. And these women live in these homes from about 20 weeks of pregnancy on. And within the homes, they have all of their prenatal care that they would normally get in a physician office that we would have in the United States. They get ultrasounds, genetic screening, nutrition, dental care, psychological support, and this is done from about 20 weeks. In 89, they boosted that number from 15 to about 150 when they had a decrease in, it was during the famine, and they were having difficulties with nutrition and food. They boosted these maternity homes to, that must be me lowering the lights so I won't have to see you so I could speak more comfortably. No. As you can see, I'm a clinician. I see patients in dark rooms. We talk one-on-one. I don't do the group thing very much. But anyways, so they moved it from 15 to 150, and they started bringing nutrition into the picture. Currently today, there are about 300 of these maternity homes throughout Cuba. This strategy, as you'll see in slides to come, seems to have effectively lowered their maternal mortality rates and infant mortality rates from where they were prior to instituting these maternity homes. So as I said before, so you're in the polyclinic and your primary care doctor has already screened you and screened you for your risk, and he or she will refer you to these maternity homes if you're found to be at risk. Some of the risk factors: teenagers, advanced maternal age, older women, multiple pregnancies, women who have any risk factors for preterm delivery, if they've had a preterm delivery, nutrition, because they realize that low birth weight is linked to infant mortality. So if you have nutritional issues, if you're anemic, you will be sent referred in. Social problems, mental, psychological problems are also indicators for a referral, as well as the original geographic disparity. If you didn't live close to a hospital where you could be delivered, 100% of Cuban women are delivered by a skilled obstetrical person. And again, some of the care that you can get is, as we observed, was the same care that I would in my high-risk clinic provide. Just plain routine prenatal care, genetic screening, the same genetic screening that I did here. That was shocked me, but the same genetic screening, ultrasound, all labs, again, dental. They have dental care within the many of these homes because they understand that good dental hygiene and low birth weight and are all linked. And the maternity homes, although there's a physician that comes on a daily basis to see these patients, it's primarily nursing and extenders that are there 24 hours, 7 days a week with these women. So what are the results of some of these strategies? It seems that Cuba is on target for Millennium Goals 4 and 5, and they've safeguarded maternal health and put lots of resources in maternal health for at-risk pregnancies. They've improved infant mortality using less financial resources than some industrialized countries. And this is sort of a slide indicating what has happened over the past almost 50 years of these maternity homes. As you could see earlier, they had very high maternal mortality ratios, and they've dropped significantly. Their infant mortality rate is very low at 4.5%, as compared to U.S., which cumulative is about 6.4 to 6.8%, with African Americans having a 13.4% infant mortality. Maternal mortality rates in the United States, it's about the ratio is about 11-12. However, for African American women, it's 28-29%. So if we can compare what they do to what we do, you know, because of their governmental structure, it's from the top down, so they have universal preconception, universal or national genetic screening programs. They house their women in maternity homes, and of course, as we do and they do, they have acute care facilities. So in the event that you become too ill, you are moved from these maternity homes to your acute care facility. United States, although I hope we do a good job, I'm part of the process, our care is a little bit sporadic. You left to the individual physician. It's not or patient driven. we have governmental and non-governmental agencies that try to impact, you know, preconception, genetic screening, and help us with our at-risk mothers. But Cuba's tends to be a little bit more comprehensive, and as a result, you know, the infant mortality rate for us here in the United States is for non-Hispanic blacks is high, and still higher for whites, and our cumulative is about 6.8. So what are we doing here to try and improve the health outcome of our citizens? I think we're starting to focus on maternal and child health as a core area for the well-being of the next generation. Healthy People 2020 has a long list of maternal and infant initiatives to decrease fetal and infant death, to decrease child death, to reduce maternal mortality, decrease low birth weight, reduce preterm births, etc. So we're seeing that it's an important aspect of our healthcare system. And then, of course, we're now looking at life course perspectives, and my colleague, Dr. Liu, for an obstetrician, he's done so much in trying to enlighten us about life course perspectives, and for us to understand that it's just not delivery of healthcare, which is what I do, but we need policies from a national level to be created so that we can have conditions where we can have healthy mothers and healthy babies. So what were the lessons learned from this observation in Cuba last November? Very integral to their delivery system is this, for maternal health, is primary care model with a referral system to a safe place, a maternity home. There appear to be little delay in access to these medical homes from our observations. They seem to have an integrated system where you can provide the necessary stopgap services like the psychologist or the genetic services or the high-risk physician or the psychologist, things that are difficult for patients to navigate in our current system. They emphasize prevention and health promotion. Having been there, what I thought that we needed here are stronger national health policies to address infant and maternal mortality, although our governmental and non-governmental agencies are in the process of trying to improve perinatal outcome. And as we all know here, perinatal outcome not only impacts the individual family, the local community, but it impacts the health of our nation, specifically as some of our speakers have said here, that we're finding out that that environment, that intrauterine environment and the perinatal outcome is linked to risk of developing chronic illnesses such as obesity, hypertension, coronary artery disease, and diabetes. So in summary, although it was a brief observation and not all of the questions were answered, I think that policymakers should look at this model in Cuba as a model to help improve the health of the women and their children and ultimately our nation. Thank you.